Council, good morning. Before you approach, as you can see, five members of the court are here in the courtroom. Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx, but she can see and hear and answer questions just like everybody else.
Good morning. Justice Miller Lerman here for record purposes. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Justice Stacy is recused in this matter. Please, while you are not presenting, keep your masks on. When you are presenting to the court, when you are arguing, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Does anybody have any questions? Thank you very much then. Mr. Brock, good morning to you.
I am Tony Brock and I represent Ron Stephenson, mail carrier. You've already read the brief, I'm certain, so I'm going to try to hit the issue. I'm going to try to hit the issue head on, and we have to overcome this problem of whether this evidence goes to propensity as opposed to identity. Because I think
do 404 and the character evidence, rule of evidence, does that apply to a dog?
I think that's a good question. It's what I don't think there's a lot else we can argue about here. I think the rule of evidence 404(2) probably applies to every case where
doesn't it refer to persons?
It does. If you don't use a dog, you know, then what are we left with? And I'm not so sure that if we take 404(2) out of play in a dog case, then we are left with why is this evidence not admissible?
Certainly, is it a relevance issue at that point?
It becomes, well, it does. But there is independent relevance when we offer it to prove identity. So when I look at the cases, really almost all the cases involve criminal cases.
And they all involve people.
People, that's right.
What if we take 404 out of it entirely? What's the argument that the prior bites are relevant to prove identity?
Here's how I look at that. If I come to you and I say, this dog bit somebody, and the only people that say this first bite was a playful bite are the appellees, but that's bite number one. And then there's the dog bites another person. And then a couple years after that, the dog bites another person. And after that, another person. And now I've got number five. And the issue is identification, whether Boss, let's just call this dog Boss, whether Boss is the dog. All of this evidence is relevant because it makes it more likely than not that Boss, owned by these defendants at this house, is the dog that bit Ron Stephenson.
Was there ever a question that there was another dog that was a candidate for this bite?
No, sir. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, they look for other dogs out there. Animal control guy came around and looked for other dogs, didn't find any.
Was that the defendant's position at trial? It must have been some other dog.
Correct. Yeah. The whole defense of this claim is Ron Stephenson, it's a head shaker, right? I can't get around that. Ron Stephenson had trouble looking at a cell phone picture of this dog in a hospital when he was getting treatment for his dog bite.
The jury heard that testimony, but they also heard his testimony that he looked at another photo on Facebook or social media, that there's also a kind of a perp walk, so to speak, with the dog, that he was able to see the dog and one of the opinion was 95% sure that was the dog. The jury heard that as well.
They did. I think that makes it even more important when you have a case where the burden of proof is by a preponderance of the evidence, to have all of the evidence and to weigh it. I vigorously disagree with the trial court's position that they should kick out that evidence because, one, once they kicked out these prior incidents, these prior bites, that was the same thing as putting a thumb on the scale, and it was not an even fight after that. I mean, that case was gutted.
What was the court's stated reason for keeping the evidence out?
Really, it came into that time factor. They were too different, too long ago, and some of the facts we don't know because I was unable to depose some of the people. That's another story. It's not important. One person that I did depose, I thought it was relevant, but the trial court said, you know, there's not enough things that are similar to make it a signature. I don't think that that's really, I don't think that's the standard. In fact, I think the case Kibbe, State versus Kibbe, says, you know, the time difference goes to weight, not to admissibility.
But that, once again, involved a person.
It did involve a person.
How does Rule 403 fit into this analysis, and how do we review the court's determination on a decision involving Rule 403?
Hopefully, all my evidence is very prejudicial. Whether it's unfair is the question that we have to ask. And that can be taken care of with a limiting instruction. Rule 403 and 404, remember, are court rules that are enacted not in a vacuum. They know all of this, these potential problems that could come in.
May I ask a question? When you say it's contextual, the case, is this correct? The case is with reference to 54601?
Yes.
Okay, so that is the context in within which these rulings are taking place. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so with respect to roughly a strict liability statute, how does that impact the analysis of permitting the admission of evidence? Before the court imposes strict liability or the fact finder imposes strict liability, the evidence must be, finish the sentence. Thank you.
On liability, it doesn't affect the analysis. On the issue, well, because it's strict liability, on the issue of identification of the dog, I think the analysis is the same analysis that is used in all evidentiary questions. And that is it relevant to any issue? And here it's definitely relevant to identification of the dog that bit, or whether it is more likely than not true that Boss bit Ron Stevenson. And then, of course, we go to Rule 403. Is it unfairly prejudicial? And I don't think it is. If there's any question about that, that can be alleviated or taken care of with a limiting instruction. The problem that I want the court to take
was a limiting instruction request.
I don't think so. After the judge, ruled that, it was pretty much a done deal.
Thank you.
One thing before I sit down. This is a jury case, and we're allowed a jury trial by the Seventh Amendment, by state constitutional as well. A question like this, where this evidence should be admitted, it should be weighed by the jury. Yes, there are some pieces of evidence that should not come in. I think the example in the cases was a DUI case. If a guy is being tried for the fourth time for a DUI and he's got 3 convictions, yes, that kind of evidence shouldn't come in. But this kind of case, where we're not putting people in jail, the people in this community and Lincoln and Lancaster County should be able to weigh that evidence. And even if they have a limiting instruction, they should be able to weigh this evidence and decide, is this the dog that bit my client? Is this the dog that bit Ron Stephenson? Does that evidence help us? So I think it belongs to the jury, not to the judge. I'll save the rest of the time. That's all I have. We should have something else here.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. Hannon?
Yes.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mike Hannon. I represent the appellees Jordan Cole Shoecraft in this matter. I think there's two evidentiary issues at play. The court asked a little bit earlier about 404 and character evidence and whether that applies. I think that's a bit of an unanswered question, but then there's also Rule 403, which is where I want to turn my focus to first. Under Rule 403, is this court's long held, that rule provides wide discretion to trial courts in determining, allowing to prohibit certain evidence. If that evidence, the probative value of that evidence is substantially outweighed by unfair prejudice. And here, if there is some relevancy to these three prior incidents,
which section did the trial court judge use, and is that relevant to our review?
Are you referring to which section, 403 or 404?
Yes.
I believe it was a combination of both. The court's order certainly referenced prejudice under 403, and it used the analysis of 404 in determining, I believe, its probative value and its prejudice.
Is it an error of law for the judge to refer to 404 specifically to regarding a person and say that's and swap in a dog?
I'm not sure if it's an error of law. I believe that it's just simply an unanswered question whether the 404 applies to a dog. But I don't think it's error for the court to use some of that 404 framework in analyzing 403 under its discretion to do that.
What's the risk of this evidence being unfairly prejudicial?
Well, I believe the risk, when a jury hears three prior incidents and there's a question of if Boss was the dog or not, there's going to be some predisposed thinking in the jury. It probably was Boss if he's done it in the past. It's a little bit of a propensity argument.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that in this case? If the plaintiff's argument is, got to figure out who was the dog, and their argument is it's more likely that it's Boss if Boss is a biter. Why is that unfairly prejudicial for the jury to use the propensity language?
Because I think it doesn't allow the jury to really focus on all of the other evidence as they weigh all the evidence that they're going to hear. I mean, they got to hear Mr. Stephenson tell the jury 100% it was Boss. There's some case law that I believe it's the more the essential the evidence, the greater its probative value. We would submit these prior incidents aren't necessarily essential to determining whether it was Boss, because the appellant sat there and said it's 100% that was Boss.
Wouldn't that go more to weight than admissibility, though? Wouldn't it be a situation where the evidence would come in and then it'd be up to the attorneys to argue why that evidence was important or not, as opposed to being admissible or inadmissible?
I think that's one consideration that could be, but I think you still have to do a 403 analysis to just really determine how prejudicial it's going to be. And so I want to go into the context of those three prior bites, which the trial court noted as it analyzed this 403, the probative value of those incidents.
If the evidence had been that Boss had never bit anyone before, would you have been allowed to adduce that evidence on a statutory dog bite claim?
I guess the same question probably would have resulted in whether you can have character evidence. And if we're not going to apply character evidence, then we probably would have been allowed to. They could have certainly made a Rule 403 objection to that, which they're not going to, but
If the circumstances were reversed, I guess is what I'm asking. And if the dog had not, boss had not ever bit anyone, and your side had attempted to adduce that evidence, and your opponent had objected on 403, how should the court have ruled?
I mean, we certainly would have taken the position that they should have allowed it in, but the judge would have had to weigh that evidence and the probative value of it, which is what he did here under the discretion given to him under 403.
Is the analysis impacted, is the evidentiary and admissibility analysis impacted by working under the framework of 54601 in terms of strict liability? Before, you know, I'm saying as a general matter, in before you impose strict liability, how certain must the proofs be and how comprehensive must they be?
We think that does make a difference. This is a strict liability case brought under 54601. So negligence, the common law negligence or common law strict liability on dog bites does not apply. And so the requirement to prove knowledge of dangerous propensity has gone away. So when you have such an exacting standard as strict liability that we're going to hold the shoe crafts to my clients, I think there needs to be a little higher showing of evidence. And really, this is thin circumstantial evidence being used to prove that it was Boss when there is actually direct evidence from the appellant himself of Boss's identity.
If the jury had elected to find against your clients, what would we have been called upon to do?
If the court's ruling of keeping the evidence out?
No, I'm talking about if the jury had found that Boss was the dog. You're now sitting where Mr. Brock is. Wouldn't we be giving great deference to the jury verdict?
I guess for clarity, I mean, assuming that they got to hear evidence of the prior incidents or no?
No.
Okay, so if they didn't hear evidence of the prior incidents and the jury still found that it was Boss?
Yes.
I mean, I think that's an interesting question in that.
Wouldn't we be applying the standard of the jury had to be clearly wrong?
Yeah, it'd be a different standard. It wouldn't be under the abuse of discretion standard.
And I realize, of course, your opponent is not raising a sufficiency argument. He's raising an evidentiary argument here. But doesn't go to what Justice Miller-Lerman was asking. It's simply the preponderance or greater weight of the evidence. And then the jury's determination of that would only be reviewed for clear error, right?
It'd be different, yes. And I think that's important that it's a different standard because we're under an abuse of discretion standard, which gives more deference here to the trial court on an evidentiary matter.
Thank you.
Boss had bit a mailman before. Same exact circumstances. Then is it 403?
I think that goes more to the probative value prong of the 403 analysis. That maybe the trial judge could have said that's more probative, which makes it harder to be substantially outweighed by the unfair prejudice. But here, the three prior bites, the evidence that was elicited at trial was thin.
Well, why would that be more probative? Does the detail of it being a mailman make any difference here?
I don't think necessarily. The detail of the mailman, but if, for example, it was in a situation where it was middle of the day, dog running at large, maybe that would be more probative. But in these prior incidents, that's not what occurred. These all occurred in the home of the shoe crafts. Particularly the 2014 incident occurred in the middle of the night when Boss was confined to the living room of the shoe crafts home. So they're different. The context in which they occurred are different than what happened in 2017 with Stevenson, which goes to the probative value and the relevancy of it.
Is propensity evidence inherently unfairly prejudicial?
I think it is, and I think our system generally recognizes that, and that's why we have 404. There is an exception, 4042, but I also believe the unfair prejudice of propensity is recognized in the analysis of 404.
Excuse me. Propensity evidence inherently unfairly prejudicial if we're talking about what is the law treats as chattel
I believe it still has some sort of prejudice. I think, you know, we think it's unfairly prejudicial to allow these three incidents that are different in 2017. It's different witnesses, different time, different context. That creates the unfair prejudice, not so much whether it's boss or a dog or something else. Unless there are any further questions, I conclude and we've asked the trial court's decision be affirmed.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 47 seconds.
47 seconds. Mr. Brock.
Just a couple of comments. They keep saying three prior incidents, not three. It's four. I represent victim number five. This leads me to your comment or your questions about whether, what if it was another mailman? Would that make it more probable? What if it's a three-year-old on a trike? What if it's 90-year-old grandma on the bike path behind their house out for a walk? That part doesn't matter. So I think using 4042 on a dog probably is wrong. It's the wrong standard to use. This evidence should have been weighed by the jury. Yes, trial courts have wide discretion. I agree with that. And in many cases, that is necessary, but not in this one. We have, oh, you already have too many victims. One more is way too many. It's unnecessary. I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Counsel, as you leave courtroom today, please use the side door to my left and please properly social distance and wear your masks if at all possible. Thank you very much for participating today. And this is the last case of the day, so the court is adjourned.